Daniel chapter 6, and with this chapter we will finish the first half of the book of Daniel, and we'll begin next week, if we finish tonight, I hope we will, in chapter 7, the second half of Daniel, where we get into the prophecies more fully and completely. We're going to see Daniel's vision. Chapter 7, which falls in line with the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had back in chapter 2. And through the rest of the book, we'll see many of the prophecies developed. Now, tonight, of course, we're in the 6th chapter of Daniel, and one of the most familiar passages of Scripture in the Bible. It's interesting that the Lord devotes 28 verses, as we count them, to this account, about the same amount that he devotes to some of the great prophecies. And I think we have to regard the amount of space that God gives to a thing, something of its importance. So this is an important chapter. It's important in many different ways. And I think there's some lessons and things in it that maybe we'll see tonight that trust maybe something fresh and new, as well as the obvious things that are in the chapter about Daniel's faithfulness and God's deliverance from the lion's den. Now let's read. We'll read the first three verses first. And we have here the new kingdom of the Medes and the Persians set up. It pleased Darius. Now we come to this man Darius, and we're not going to go into discussion of this, but the critics, those that oppose or say that Daniel is not the author of the book, try to point to this man Darius as one of the reasons that they give for not accepting the time. In other words, that Daniel wrote it in his lifetime, and these liberals, modernists, folks who deny Daniel's authorship, make their point because in secular history there is no Darius that has been turned up yet. Now, we said the same thing, remember, about Belshazzar. They used that also as one of their objections to reasons for saying that Daniel didn't write the book. But as we pointed out in the 1800s, an archaeologist dug up some things in a section of Babylon there, and Belshazzar's name was mentioned several times in there. So they had to drop that argument after that. And probably one of these days, somebody will dig up some artifacts or something around there that will have Darius' name on it. But whether they do or not makes no difference. We know that Cyrus was the one who captured Babylon. And Cyrus is the primary king of all the Medes and the Persians, which includes a much bigger empire than just Babylon. See, we showed you some time ago in our maps, and maybe we'll bring those back on the overhead one night to show you the different size of these kingdoms. But the Babylonian kingdom was the smallest of the four kingdoms, and yet it was the most perfect kingdom, the most autocratic kingdom. The king had the absolute power there, and it was a kingdom that lasted some 68 or 9 years. And until Nebuchadnezzar died, it was a very strong kingdom. Now we come in this chapter to a king that, as I said, his name is not mentioned in secular history. Some believe that he was the general who, with Cyrus, actually Cyrus, according to history, did not come to Babylon until after the city had fallen and was taken. And he set up a king there to serve under him in the area of Babylon. And this is the Darius that we have here. Some who believe that he is the same one as the general who captured for Cyrus this city. But irregardless whoever he is, we know that he's a very important man in Daniel's life. And Daniel mentions him several different times in the later writings in the book. So we might as well get used to the name of this man, because he was a real man. He was king of this section of the Medes and Persian Empire. That is the Babylonian section of it. And so he, soon after taking charge of the of the country and of the city of Babylon, he set up a government. Now, of course, you see, after they overthrew Babylon, they had to establish their own government to control the land, because it was quite a large land mass. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. Now, this does not necessarily mean that there were 120 different provinces, but there were 120 different princes. Satraps is the word, that were responsible for the ruling and the running of the whole country, as Darius set it up. Then, over these, he set three presidents, of whom Daniel was first. Now, here's an interesting thing right off, because you read some people, they say Daniel was maybe 88, 89 by this time. Others have his age a little younger than that, maybe 84, 85. Depends on what age you say he was when he left Jerusalem, when he was captured and came to Babylon, which we really don't know. We know he was probably a teenager, but whether he was 14 or 19, we just don't know. And so we don't know exactly how old Daniel was at this time, but he certainly was in his 80s. No question about that. So here's a man that is, he's already served under several different kings, and now, as the time is approaching for the 70 years of Israel's captivity to be over, because Cyrus was the one already prophesied by God in the book of Isaiah. We've studied that in our Sunday school class. Hundreds of years before this, God had prophesied that a man named Cyrus would give the decree to rebuild the city and so forth. And so that is the Cyrus that has captured Babylon, the first of the rulers of the Medes and Persians over this particular country. So now these three presidents, the 120 princes, have to answer to these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first. Now of the three, he was the chief. He was the first of these presidents. Now, undoubtedly Darius, from talking to other people, maybe even that queen that had told Belshazzar about Daniel and that he could interpret the writing on the wall. Maybe he talked to her, or maybe because of the fact that he had been awarded, you remember, the cloak and the gold chain and made third ruler under Belshazzar, this might have been his introduction to Darius. But anyway, it came obvious very soon to Darius that Daniel was a man that he could count on, could be trusted, and had leadership ability. And so he put him in the first place of these three presidents. Now, that's not all. And notice the purpose of these, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Now, understand, this is a new king and a new kingdom. And they set up this government. And so they're, in order to be sure that the taxes are collected, that the money that the king is supposed to get gets to the king. Many of these kingdoms were very corrupt, and these people who were in charge of provinces and things like that were, they were feathering their own nests. They were buttering their own bread, you know. They were getting some of it for themselves. And so this system was set up to try to protect the king's interest, so that he would have no damage. And then verse 3 gives us the reason, probably, why the other two presidents and maybe some of the other princes got together to try to get rid of Daniel. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him. And you know, Daniel had served other kings. These are heathen kings, and yet he had been faithful to them. They could count on him. He never worked against their interest. He looked after their interest, and he understood his role. He didn't try to be pious or act in some fashion that would bring shame upon the name of his God. He acted in a way always that would always by looking at Daniel, always by watching Daniel, always by observing Daniel, you were impressed by the sincerity of this man, the genuineness of this man, the ability of this man, and in the process you knew the God he served because he was always clear about who he served. And so he was a tremendous testimony for God in these heathen lands, in these heathen times. It's interesting that God raised up such a man to have him during these times. You might call Daniel, he was, of course, the remnant of his time. Not only Daniel, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and there may have been some others. A very small remnant of Jewish people who were faithful to the Lord. So the king thought, it says, verse 3, to set him over the whole realm. He was going to make him something like the prime minister, you know, and just turn the whole running of the government over to Daniel because of the excellent spirit that was in him and his honesty, his integrity. He knew that if Daniel looked after it, he would get his full share. There wouldn't be any stealing of the money from the treasury, anything of that nature. Now, it's very interesting that the presidents hated the other two presidents and some of the princes, not necessarily all 120 of them, but those that were in that particular area. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Now, I wonder, and I want to ask this, and I want some answers from you. Why do you suppose that these men hated Daniel so? What brought about this feeling of hatred for him, do you suppose? Yeah. All right, that's very likely true, that they were corrupt. They were taking money, and they knew if Daniel ran this thing, their corrupt days were over. That they weren't going to get it, you know, cut anymore out of the government, and so forth. That's very likely one of the important things. But there's probably some other things as well. What? Somebody else? Yes, all right. That very likely, and especially, I think, the fact he was a Jew. Because you notice he said, when they went before the king, we get a little further along, they said, you know, this of the captivity, he's one of those that brought in here of the captivity. See, they point that out, the fact that he's a foreigner, the fact that he's not. And it shows very likely some of the anti-Semitic feeling that's always been around against God's people, you know, the Jewish people. So that's very likely. Maybe the fact that he was old, you know, and they looked like they said, well, we'll just wait him out and he'll die and we won't have to make this plot. But in any case, whatever, these are certainly some of the things, and maybe there were other reasons, but these are likely the ones that caused them to hate him so. You see, any time you stand for God, I don't care what age it is, whether it's today, 1991, in so-called Christian America, if you stand for God, if you walk with God like Noah walked with God, like Enoch walked with God, which means that you don't walk with the world, you don't endorse the world and the things of the world. When you walk in that manner and have that kind of a testimony, you are going to be hated. You know, you're going to be hated. The ungodly hate the godly. The unrighteous hate the righteous. Now, we're not righteous because we're better than they are. We're not righteous because we have attained some level of righteousness by our efforts or by our works. No, we claim righteousness by faith. We're just as bad as they are, but we have come to Christ. And His righteousness has been imputed to us. And now we are righteous, you see, by grace. Our salvation is by grace, not because we deserve it. We don't deserve it, but because God in grace has shown us mercy and has redeemed us and saved us. And so we are chosen of God. We're His. And that very fact causes those who are not to hate, just like Cain hated Abel. That's established right there in the first two boys, brothers, one righteous, one of man of faith, one who obeyed God and did things the way God said do it, and the other one who went his own way, and he hated the other one. Well, it's always been so. Now, they were not able to find any fault in him. I'm sure they spent some time going over the books, maybe talking to the secretaries and getting computer readouts, whatever, you know, they had at those times, and checking out everything, and everything balanced. Checkbooks balanced. Everything was in order. No place was there where some funds were slipped under the table to himself or anybody else. I mean, the way it says it here, there was not any error. That means that his books were right. His accounting was good. I mean, he kept things right in line. And not only that, there was any fault in him. The way he handled things, the way he looked after matters, so he was faithful. Oh, what a testimony this man, Daniel, has. And you say, the man's 80-something years old. Don't he know he's supposed to retire now? He don't have to worry about being faithful. He can just ride now, you know. He just kind of go along for the ride. not Daniel. As long as he lived, he walked with the Lord. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Now, you see, they understood this thing. They had observed him. They watched him. They knew about something about these Jews, the Hebrews, and the God that they worshipped and that they served. And so they said, if we find any fault, we're going to have to create something. We're going to have to trap him, because we can't get him any other way unless we trap him. And so that's what they said about. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto the king, King Darius, live forever. And that's the normal introduction to a king. And now they said, all the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, this may have sounded reasonable. This Darius had just taken over, just been running things for some short time. And so in order to recognize his leadership and to give him some honor, they figured this would be a good way to, by flattery, to get him to sign this decree that would finish it for Daniel, they thought, you see. But they lied, of course, to start with. Men like this have no scruples. And you know, if they're willing to murder someone, they certainly are not above lying. You know, lying is a terrible sin. It's an awful sin. It's always listed, you know, with those sins that'll send you to hell. He talks about all those terrible sins, and all liars shall have their place. Okay? I mean, God hates lying. He hates a false balance. He hates scales that aren't true. God is a just God, a fair God. And he hates any kind of unfairness, you see, in any manner. And lying is certainly one of those things. Anybody who will lie will steal. given the opportunity. A person who will lie and hold to a lie means you may tell one, get caught, and have to, when you was a kid, get torn up for a time or two, and you learn pretty quick that that doesn't pay off very good odds. That's what I learned and found out that the best thing to do is to did something wrong, tell the truth about it, and take your punishment and go on from there. But now, they lied then when they said all the kingdoms and all these people, all these captains, and so forth and so on. Well, those folks couldn't answer for themselves. They couldn't tell the king they didn't sign it or they weren't for it, obviously. So, you know, because these fellows are on a roll here with all these people that they're claiming to have behind them. And so they said, we want you to establish a royal statute to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, obviously this was set especially and purposely for Daniel. That's the whole purpose of it. No other purpose at all was to trap Daniel. And so they're using this lie and this deceit, this effort to flatter the king to get the job done of killing Daniel. Now, O king, establish a decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Now, one thing you have to understand that we are not in an absolute monarchy now like we were when Nebuchadnezzar was on the throne. He had absolute rule. We are down now from the head of gold to the arms and chest of silver. See? This is the Medes and Persian era. Silver. We're already decaying. Silver's not as valuable as gold. We're going down. See? And man continues to go down. The times of the Gentiles goes all the way down to the feet, which of course are iron and clay. A mixture. But at this particular time, it's already started down. And so Darius had set up a kind of government, and he, of course, was under Cyrus in the first place, but Cyrus had given him control, and he was the king of that whole section and so on. But he had given authority and all to these presidents and so forth, and he didn't make decisions like Nebuchadnezzar did, just whatever he felt like on the spur of the moment, what he felt like doing. They had certain laws and things that they had to do. But whenever he did sign a decree, whenever he did pass a law, it could not be reversed. Now, you see, if he'd been an absolute monarch, he could have reversed it. But you see, he had the pressure on him of the other people who had been involved in the decision and so forth of this thing. And so it couldn't be changed. That was part of the law that they had, is that when these decrees were established, if they were of this type, they could not be changed. Now, wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. See? Now, if he'd have stopped to think, he'd have known that Daniel wouldn't have gone for this. But he was so elated. He was so blown up with pride over this thing. Till he bit. You see? Flattery will get you everywhere. You know, the old saying, flattery will get you nowhere, but flattery will get you everywhere. Boy, you just flatter, you know, people, and they'll fall over backwards. They like to be flattered, you find an old gal, she's as ugly as homemade sin. You tell her that she's pretty as she can be, and she'll just smile all over the place and believe it. Go home, look in the mirror, and still believe it, you know. It's just the way flattery is, you know. And so Darius, no exception, he was caught by it, taken by it, and he fell for it. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled down upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Now, the question here comes about, now, Daniel knew about it. Word got back to him that this thing had happened. He didn't raise a stink. He didn't go protest. He didn't get a bunch of his friends together and make placards and walk around the king's palace saying, unjust, unfair, unjust, unfair, you know, like folks do today. Daniel just went right on about his business. That's what he'd been doing. Now, we could ask the question, well, what should Daniel do? What would you have done? Well, he could have not prayed for 30 days. That'd have shown him, wouldn't it? He said, I'll show you. I just won't pray for 30 days and we'll mess up your plan. Okay? That would have messed up their plan, wouldn't it? If that's what you want to do is get the best of somebody else, if that's what you're after is to best them, now they're trying to best you, so you're going to best them. No, Daniel didn't have that kind of spirit in him. Daniel didn't have that kind of attitude about things. Let him go. Let it happen. So what? Okay. Well, he could have gone in, closed his doors, got in the closet, prayed quietly. They wouldn't have known. They couldn't have peeped in there. See? Or shut his windows, something of that nature, you know. Or he could have done like some might have done, walk out in the public square and prayed out in public. Said, you want to catch me? Catch me. And pray out loud in public. See? That's tempting God. That's not wise either. That's not the way. He just went on doing what he was doing. He paid no attention to him. He just paid no attention to him at all. He just went on about his service for the Lord like he always had. He didn't get upset. He didn't get mad. He didn't write letters to the paper, newspaper. But what he could have done, you know, or he could have gone to the king and asked for a hearing. Or something like that. No, he didn't do any of that. He just went right on about his service for the Lord. That's the way he'd always been doing, praying three times a day with his window open toward Jerusalem. Jerusalem is all in ruins, but that's where his heart is, Jerusalem. Every Jew who knows God, his heart's in Jerusalem. You can count on that. And so Daniel prayed toward Jerusalem like he always had. Now, so they found him praying. Verse 11, and making supplication for God. Boy, they couldn't wait. And they just went running all over each other to get down to the king. And they told the king, hast thou signed a decree? Why, they knew he'd signed a decree. They're the one pressed it on him, trying to make him look like a fool too, in which they did, that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. The king answered, said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said to the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity, there's that anti-Semitic of Judah, regardeth not thee. Now that, they always lie. You know, they always tell things. It wasn't because Daniel didn't regard the king. He's the best friend the king had. O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. Not with Daniel. See, this king, Darius, was a good man in many ways. He was undoubtedly a weak man in some ways. But at least the man recognized what a fool he'd been. Because if you're going to trap Daniel... You know, it's like you do in classroom sometime. I found this out a long time ago. You set a trap to catch some kid who's misbehaving. You say, the next time somebody does so-and-so-and-so-and-so, and I'm going to get him, it'll be the nicest fella in the class that does it next time. Be the sweetest person there. You know, you'll always get the wrong fella that way. You won't ever get the right one that way. But the king is displeased with himself, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. That means that he really went about it. He called in his lawyers. He tried to find out if there's any way to break these laws of Medes and Persians. Could you break it if it was set as a trap for somebody else and whatever, you know, and they all told him when he got to the end of the thing, no, there wasn't any way to get out of it. He'd set his heart on trying to free him, but he couldn't do it. He labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. He put off the immediate putting him in the lion's den as long as he could, trying to deliver him because he realized how this thing was. Now, then these men assembled unto the king and said, King, know, king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. In other words, let's get on with it, king. Let's get Daniel in the lion's den. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. I think it probably ought to be a question mark after that. I'm not so sure the king was that sure about it. He was hoping against hope that he would. If God was what Daniel said he was and the kind of person that he said he was, his faith in Daniel's God came because of Daniel. He didn't know anything about Daniel's God, but he knew Daniel. And because of Daniel's faithfulness, he had faith in Daniel's God. Now that's really having a testimony, isn't it? Whenever such is the case. Now, they brought the stone, laid it on the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lord. You see, this shows that matter that he wasn't the absolute ruler. The signet of these princes and presidents or whatever was also put there so that neither one of them could break it during the night. The king couldn't break it, and the princes couldn't break it. The king couldn't break because the prince's seal was there. It had just been his. He could have broken it and Daniel out and then resealed it. But there was another one there too, and that was the Lord's signet. So it is settled. Now, then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. You see, the nighttime with kings and princes is that's the big time of the day. They eat their meals late, and they have all these entertainment and the music comes in, the dancing girls and all those things, you know. And so the nights are the really exciting time for these Eastern kings. But not this king, because he didn't sleep all night. All he's doing is thinking about Daniel and waiting for the morning to hurry up and get here. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, and of course it'd be still dark down in that den, so he couldn't necessarily see Daniel down in there at that time of day because it's very early in the morning. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lion's mouth, and they have not hurt me. So we have here a very similar thing. Remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, whenever they were cast into the burning fiery furnace, and three men were cast in, but there was a fourth man, the Son of God, like the Son of God, Scripture says, very likely either Michael or Christ himself. Michael is considered the special guardian of the chosen people, and he in other places he is sent to do things. Or it may have been, of course, and I personally believe it was Christ himself who was there in the den of lions with Daniel. And so he had a good night of fellowship, good sleep, I'm sure, and all that night. So then was the king exceeding glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found on him because he believed in his God. A lot of liberals said, well, they were probably old lions, and they weren't having any teeth, and they couldn't hurt anything that way. Well, I tell you, an old lion can scratch you up pretty good, if you didn't have any teeth. But that's not the case, because the king commanded and brought these men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. Now, that was the way the law worked in those days. It's the way it worked in Israel, too, by the way. When Achan did his dirty deeds of stealing, and he was stoned, and so was his wife and his family. That's the way you get rid of, so there won't be any more of these kind coming on out of that crew. You see, he got rid of the whole bunch of them. Killed the wives, the children. You see, the sins of the fathers passed down to the children. And notice it says, the lions had the mastery of them and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came to the bottom of the den. Well, if the liberals are right, they must have brought in a new bunch of lions. No, these are the same lions. And it shows how ferocious they were and shows how God delivered his faithful servant. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. And you can decide for yourself what you think. I personally think he was converted over this. Some think maybe not, but many men I read concerning it think so. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and steadfast forever, in his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. Boy, that you read the different phrases there and see what he said. Tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. Fear him. And that is a forerunner of trust. If you don't fear him, you're not going to trust him. For he is the living God. He's not the God of the dead. He's the God of the living. He's steadfast forever. His kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth. Who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions? Boy, that's quite a statement by this heathen king, and what he learned from this account and this time with Daniel. And so it says, so Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now, there's just two or three other things I want to mention in relationship to this, because there are some types in this chapter. For instance, Daniel here is a type of Christ, hated by the rulers, as Jesus was hated. The lion's den is a type of death. When Daniel was cast into that lion's den, except for the mercy of God, he'd have been torn to pieces. He'd have died there. And of course, Christ was put upon the cross to die in our place, pay for our sins. Death was unable to hold him, just like it was unable to hold Christ. And the deliverance from the lion's den is a type of the resurrection. So in Daniel, we have a picture here of the death, the burial, the resurrection of Christ. And then there's another thing that's very important in this, that Daniel here is also a type of the remnant of Israel during the tribulation period. He was one and a very small percent. There will be a very small percent of Jews saved. The scripture speaks of 144,000, 12,000 from each tribe. That's not very many from the millions of Jews. So this whole experience is a type of Israel in the Great Tribulation. Darius is a type of the man of sin. Now, I know that Darius is nowhere near as mean as the man of sin is going to be, the Antichrist. But now notice this. He declares himself to be God. That's actually what he did with that decree. He was declaring a man to be God. And that's exactly what Antichrist is going to do. When he sets up his kingdom, he's going to declare himself to be God. And prayer and worship to be directed to him. See, Darius set himself up as God and said, all prayer and worship is to come to me. Now, he did it because he was caught off guard, didn't realize what they were about, but he still did it. And he becomes a type of the man of sin because of that. Daniel is a type of the remnant delivered from the terrible tribulation. The lion's den is a type of the tribulation period. And there will be some Jews come out of the tribulation period alive. Daniel prospered after he came out of the lion's den under Cyrus. And Cyrus, in the scripture, I believe it's 44th chapter of Isaiah, God calls him by name and says, "My servant, Cyrus." So Cyrus becomes a type of Christ in the scripture, and Daniel prospered under Cyrus. You see? And so the Jews will prosper under Christ after they've been delivered from the lion's den or the great tribulation. All right, well, so much in this chapter, Daniel.